Hello, everyone.
All right. Hello, everybody. Everybody is coming in by the hundreds. Welcome tonight. We'll just let you come in. While you're coming in, let us know in the chat where you're coming from, where you're watching from this evening. It'd be nice to see how far we're reaching tonight. Tauranga. Hooray, kapiti. Oh my gosh. Okay, this is going to be one of those nights where the chat is zooming past so quickly that we can't see it. There are thousands of you registered for this evening's webinar on the gene technology bill. So we'll just let you come in for a little bit longer before we kick off and we introduce our guests and let you know what we're doing tonight. Cool, we're up over.
Brisbane. Someone's from Brisbane. That's good.
Good. I'm Alia. I'm one of the co-founders of RCR. We've got Claire Deeks, who's here, the other co-founder of RCR, and Tane Webster is our contributor for RCR, is here as well. That's those of us making up Team RCR tonight. And we'll introduce the rest of our guests shortly. Perhaps another thing that we thought that you could let us know in the chat is what is your key concern about this bill? So let us know in the chats. We're going to be able to download the chat afterwards, so we'll be able to see if there's any patterns there about what people are most worried about, which would be interesting for us to know. Will help us with our programming and things as well. Great.
Yes, and just a note to let you know that we will, as usual, turn the chat so that we can see your chat and so can all of our guests. But it just means that we don't have the issue that we refer to often as chat gate, where it's very distracting and difficult for some people to watch the webinar. But we will have it on for a bit of time now, and also we'll have it on at the end of for a good amount of time at the end as well.
So you'll still be able to write your questions through to the panelists, but the other people in the chat won't be able to see it. It's just us.
And there is going to be, this webinar is being recorded, so it will be available if you have to jump off early or you've got other friends and family who'd like to share it with. And we are intending at this point, because it was so popular, that we're going to have a follow-up webinar on next Thursday at 8 p.m. I know already that we've got Tiffany Tompkins joining us, who's one of the Tane, what was she's organic? I've just momentarily forgotten her.
Aotearoa, New Zealand. Yeah.
So she'll be there, so that'll be a good one for next Thursday to put in your diaries. And we can save all of this chat, as well as Alia said, to go through and sort out and see common themes and threads, because we won't be able to probably get to everything, but we'll give it a good go to get to a lot of the important parts of this bill. And Alia, do you want to mention about the other side?
Yeah, sure. So tonight, the people that we have here tonight to speak about this issue, we're all pretty much coming at it from opposing this bill. If you are looking for a balance on this, you can go through to our RCR website. We have had a couple of guests on who have been pro opening up the regulation in this space, including the minister herself, Judith Collins, and there was another one as well whose name escapes me.
Alec Foster.
Alec Foster.
Look.
And we, of course, we do seek to hear from multiple sides of these stories, and we do put out invites all the time. We don't always get everybody jumping at the chance and the opportunity to come and speak to us about it, but we do try. So before we kick off, I'll go through and I'll share with you the campaign that we are launching tonight, which is our Say No to GE Gene Tech. Just screen share that. So you'll be getting this through on email in the next day or so, and this is where you'll land. So reject the government's reckless gene technology bill, and if you want some help with your feedback, if you would like some of the resources that we've put together over this Christmas and New Year break, pop your name and email into there, and we will send it through to you. So on this page, there are some short video clips and some information about what the gene technology bill is, what's in the fine print, the lessons not learned, burning billions for a political agenda, The reckless gamble with our future and what you can do. And that will take you through to the next page, which is how to give feedback. And so this is where we've put together something to help you guys to do this. We've got a great walkthrough video there that shows you exactly step by step how to give your feedback on the gene technology bill, and a link through to the government website where that happens. It's like an online form. And then here we have the feedback template, which is divided into a bunch of different categories or sections. And you can go through and have a read of this, and it will help you to put together your feedback on this. So you might choose to just pick one particular section and talk about that. And there's some prompts there for you to copy and paste and add your own words, that kind of thing. And the second part of the government feedback is the recommendations. So they want to hear what your recommendations are for the bill, and there's some thoughts on that there as well for you. If you go down further, we've got a poster that can be put up. You can download that and print it in colour or black and white. Take it along to your local library, put it on the notice board, go to your organic shop, put it in there, wherever you can think about that you could put up a poster about this to help people to learn more about this issue before the 17th of February, which is the deadline. That would be really great. So we've also got some videos for you to share, and there will be memes and things as well that we've been making that you can share on social media. So that is coming to an inbox near you soon.
So we've got four guests for you on our panel tonight. First, Brendan Hoare, spokesman for Organics Aotearoa New Zealand and former president of the Soil and Health Association of New Zealand with expertise in organic agriculture. Dr. Guy Hatchard, international advocate for food safety and natural medicine with insights from his work as a director at Genetic ID. John Carapiet, spokesman for GE Free Aotearoa, known for his work with the Royal Commission on Genetic Modification and Consumer Rights Advocacy. And last but not least, John O'Frew, a conventional farmer turned regenerative agriculture expert and founder of Natural Performance Limited. So we've got a great panel for you tonight.
Cool. And we're going to be looking at, I've just been making note of the types of topics that we're going to be looking at this evening. So we're going to start off by asking the guests here about the biggest danger that they see. We'll get to that in a minute. But we're also going to be looking at New Zealand's clean green reputation, the risks to economics and trade for New Zealand, ethical considerations and the precautionary principle, consumer rights and food, farming, and some of the specific clauses that are in there. So what we don't get to this evening, we will try and get to next week. So just to let you know about that. So we'll kick off our elevator pitch. So this is what we thought would be quite a fun one to start with. Oh, actually,
You're
we were
going to do
going to talk
the
about
video.
the video.
The video first, the
Sorry.
MBIA one.
We went having a look around today, and we discovered that the government has this nifty little video that we can show you. Just share and make sure that. Oh, well, hopefully it works with the sound because it's not giving me that option. But here we go.
New Zealand's gene technology rules are changing. Gene technology is a powerful tool available to scientists, and recent improvements mean we can use it more precisely and safely than ever before. While gene technologies have been used in New Zealand for a long time, the current rules have not been updated to match the scientific advancements. Gene technology has the potential to deliver enormous benefits for New Zealand, but we haven't been able to capture these benefits. Like Australia, a regulator will be established to allow New Zealand to access the benefits and manage the risks of these technologies. The regulator will make sure the use of gene technology is safe. With updated rules, our scientists can make advances in healthcare, climate change, protect the environment, lift our agricultural productivity, and boost exports. In healthcare, new rules mean our doctors and scientists could more easily research, develop, and manufacture innovative therapies in New Zealand, like using the patient's own cells to help fight against cancer. Or scientists could develop a type of pine tree that meets our forestry needs but doesn't spread. This would help to protect and preserve our native environments. They could develop fresh fruit and vegetables that are more resilient to pests and diseases. This would mean more food ends up on the table and less in the bin. The new rules and the regulator will ensure that human health and the environment are protected. Places like Australia, Japan, the EU, and England have safely embraced gene technologies. The government welcomes feedback on changes to these rules, encourages you to have your say at Select Committee. Keep an eye on the MB website for details.
So there you go, safe and effective. It's probably just, we can just go home. That's their perspective.
So yeah, we're now going to have a bit of a discussion with our special guests, and we have perhaps been a little bit ambitious in the number of questions we're going to try to get through. We know our guests are passionate, have a lot to say. If you have to leave early, there will be a replay available in due course. Alia, could you now go over just a basic list of the topics we're going to cover?
Yeah, I've already done that. So we'll kick off with the elevator pitch. So you've all expressed concerns about the deregulation of gene tech. If you were stuck in an elevator with 30 seconds to convince Joe Public of the biggest danger of the posed by the gene tech bill, what would you say? So who's going to start with that one, Claire? I haven't got a name next to it.
We can just go around the room. So we'll start with Brendan and then go to Jono.
Cool, thank you. Welcome everyone, great to be here, thanks for the invite. I'm always fascinated in people, so before I often ask people questions, and I'm going to put in the chat a great reference people can utilize for this, and the three questions I came up with tonight is: one, tell me how you feel about your health and wellness. That's my first question. Then I'd move into, what would you do to change it? And how would that look like? And the third question I was asked is, how could you best bring that about into your own life and into others? So I'll put that chat in there. There's a great network from a woman called Fran PV, help people to utilize strategic questions rather than telling them, listing and eluding them and making them feel they're empowered to do it. Cool.
Yeah, that's great, Brennan. Yeah, we're always suggesting that, but I hadn't quite thought about this on this one. So good to remind us of that. Did I say Jono afterwards? Yes, and then yep. We'll go to John.
Yeah, sweet. What I would do in an elevator for 30 seconds to convince someone verbally, just to clear that up, it is verbally, I'd talk about health and how it all starts in the soil. And for me, you know, health begins it's such a tough one, but the essence of health is rather simple. But when we focus on one thing or another, we're forgetting about this vast complexity all around us taking place at any time. So when we're focusing on one thing, trying to fix it, and we're fixated on it, we're not always taking into account the effects on all the other moving parts all around us. So for me, it's bringing it back to keeping things really simple, and this is anything but that.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jono. John?
What I'd say, wherever you're sitting on the spectrum of views about genetic engineering in New Zealand, wake up to the fact that wherever you sit, we're about to lose the option to choose. And everyone I think I've spoken to agrees that there may be benefits, there may be risks, but everyone should have the right to choose whether they buy into GM food or not. And what this bill does, and previous active of parliament have basically are going to take away the traceability and the regulation of a whole range of what called new genomic technique products, animals, plants, organisms. So what I'd say to someone in 30 seconds is, wherever you sit on that spectrum of support to not support, you've got to allow traceability and choice. That is the deal globally and locally. Our consumers overseas want the choice. New Zealanders want the choice. So for this government to take away the choice by excluding regulating of gene editing from standard regulations is the real big issue. It's not what's in the bill. It's what's not in the bill.
Yeah.
Brilliant, thank you. Last one. Go.
So, thank you, John. I agree completely. So, why does the bill abolish labeling of gene-altered food at a time of increasing concern about the effect of additives and food processing on health? And why are we deregulating biotechnology after the pandemic, whose origin and treatment, which has claimed so many lives, came directly from the biotech sector? And also at a time when there are really big questions being asked. And for example, the UK newspapers today ran a story that working age male rates of bowel cancer have increased by 57% since the start of the pandemic. Why? And the answer comes back to there are real concerns about biotechnology. So why are we deregulating it?
Yeah, it totally seems we should be running in the other direction, really. So moving on, so the first one to answer this one is John. Could you have a talk about, our clean green reputation and brand of New Zealand is really important. It's something I mean, I feel like it's part of our national identity. So how do you think, what are the implications for this branding for New Zealand coming from this bill?
Well, I absolutely agree with you, Alia. That it's become the GE-free kind of aura has become part of our brand identity. And in a way, New Zealand has missed a bullet for the last 20 years because we've had strict regulations. There's been no ban on GMOs, but the applicants have had to show evidence of safety to the environment and to people. And the industry said that's too hard. So that's what this bill is all about, to make it easier for industry. And New Zealand has had a very good reputation and continues to have that reputation as being clean and green, ethical to some extent. We all know that we've got some big environmental problems, but the big challenge for us and the industries here is to move along that pathway to find a middle path to transition to agroecology and sustainability. Now, what the clean green brand New Zealand image is internationally is what we market ourselves on and what makes us rich. And the Prime Minister's personally said to me in rejecting my concerns that we've got to protect the organic and non-GMO markets and exports. GE's going to make us rich. Well, it's not going to make New Zealand rich if it comes at the cost of that clean green export image. And I can tell you now, the data globally is really clear. The markets for non-GMO, not just organic, but non-GMO conventional food is growing at like 12, 13% a year, not everywhere, but in our markets that we're targeting, China, India, Europe, America. So just on the marketing argument alone, you could say this bill is not going to do good for our brand or our exports. But the other side is the actual consumer. And I'm a consumer researcher, and I've spent years talking to consumers about what they want, how they want companies to help them be more sustainable, be more ethical. And in a way, New Zealand has got the trust of the international consumer. All that traceability of our dairy products when things went wrong a few years ago, they know. I think, well, I'm not sure that people know that we're not, as far as I know, using Bovia here, whereas overseas in Europe, there's boycotts of milk companies that have introduced Bovier to try and help climate issues, but by not telling the consumer. So not telling the consumer is the biggest kind of like betrayal of the consumer that you can have in the marketing world. And that's what we're about to have. We're about to have the betrayal of the consumer and that promise the government made to say, oh, there'll still be a choice by not allowing labeling and traceability of most gene edited products that are deemed as like nature. And they're not just being deemed like nature, but they're being deemed as safe as nature. And I'm sure that Guy and other scientists will explain to you why that cannot be assumed, why you need to look. So in terms of our marketing image, I think that we're really putting brand New Zealand in the firing line, and we're putting the consumer behind everybody else in terms of where they need to be. The consumer is supposed to be king and queen in the marketing world of today. And supermarkets have listened. I mean, our local supermarkets, Countdown, Woolworths, Foodstuffs with Pams, they've all got non-GMO policies for their own house label brands. That's because the consumers in New Zealand, not just internationally, but have bought into the non-GMO idea. And in fact, if you go to the supermarkets, you don't have to worry about GMOs today because none of our products grown in New Zealand are GMO. Fonterra export to the world using, I mean, certainly in America, they use the non-GMO logo. And then that was set up to let Americans know that their product hasn't got non-GMO. And that's why they're buying Fonterra and New Zealand milk. And as we know, Hawke's Bay and Northland are marketing themselves as G-free zones, supporting their exporters. So there's a whole web of the consumer demand globally and locally, and what industry and the food industry can do to meet those demands. And what this bill does is cut right across those and ignores the consumer demand for non-GMO and will undermine trust in brand New Zealand.
Brilliant, thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to weigh in on that question?
It might be a good segue, sorry.
Oh, you go ahead, Brendan.
And I was going to go, there's a bit of a segue across really into trade risk, reputation. So just a bit of context for people. I'm a practitioner in what I do, both certified organic farm. And I live the experience. And I think that's what everyone here is about. And my experience in this, so we actually trade as a company as well, okay? So we export, we've had an export go out this week. Our focus is on certified organic, natural, fair trade brands. And we work with companies that aspire to the pure, 100% pure vision. That's where people want to move. So we help through our networks. And there's a global community that really want us to win. And I think that's what we've got to remember with this. And we've done that work with NZT. We've taken delegations to Korea, Japan, US, Australia. So there's this thriving network, which isn't discussed at all, that people love what we've got. There's this mythology about New Zealand being clean and green and pure. That's why tourists come here. They don't come here for cuisine and fine dining. No, they come for something that they're missing inside. And so John's touched on that from a marketing perspective. And what we did, so as was mentioned in the introduction, we did some work with, I work extensively with the National Body Organics Aotearoa New Zealand. We've taken two delegations to Wellington. The first one was on science. That'll be touched on later. And the second one was on economics. And we engaged New Zealand Institute of Economic Research. They did a report. And this is a shocking thing for the country, really, to be ashamed of. Not just the present government, but previous governments and ministries. There's no real economic understanding of what brand New Zealand is. The last report was 2002, 22 years ago. So we haven't got a clue what we're worth. Now, in my world, that is unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable to understand what you're worth because then you'll just completely undersell yourself. And I'll touch on some other things later, but to close out on that, to give you an actual practical example, there's a great marketing guy we work with up in Asia, and he describes us Kiwis as mutoren, woodhead people. Now, an idiom of that, and this is no disrespect to, we do some fine marketing from New Zealand, we do excellent examples, but he's talking sort of vulgarly in general that our country cousinishness is very attractive, but woodhead people equates to thick as pig shit as an idiom. And that's not good enough for us to survive. So we've got to get out of one of the key things I'd like to share tonight. This myth that we feed 40 million, it's another myth. We don't feed 40 million. People don't need what we have. They want it. And that need and want thing is a critical dynamic. And anything to do with GMO is completely polar to that want. Cool. That's my sort of first piece. I've got more later.
I did see on that point of the foreign trade, when you look in the regulatory statement, that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs expresses concerns about the proposal. That's listed in there as one of the ministries apparently not happy with this.
Oh, there's been no study done. So what we do know, there's been no study. They simply don't know. They're ignorant. They're completely ignorant. We all are. And I think that's the wake-up call. All of us are ignorant. We don't know. So what do you do when you don't know? If you proceed forward with something you don't know about, that's why I mentioned woodhead people. You don't do that.
No, well, you can't work on assumptions.
And
Not
this
like.
and these trade barriers are real. I mean, the EU, I mean, one of the things I take issue with is that a video you showed at the beginning with its ridiculous claims. For example, they listed Europe as basically going ahead with deregulation of biotechnology. Well, it's not. It's stalled in the European Parliament. It's not acceptable to the country members in the EU to deregulate biotechnology. So we're being misled here. This is, I agree with you completely, Brendan. The government doesn't know what they're doing. This is kind of, they're trying to sell a myth to the public here.
And one, I mean, you're absolutely right in terms of trade works both ways. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned earlier that the NZ joint enterprise were worried, but there's also this global pressure to like, align with overseas regulators to get more trade deals. So it works both ways. But I think that the issue that's really behind this is that if we trade with the world but lose our point of difference, which and goes down to the lowest common denominator of being just commodity products like everybody else. I do take exemption, Brendan. I do think people come to New Zealand to have the fine cuisine too. Maybe not the posher stuff, but it's natural, 100%
Ah,
non-GMO.
yeah, well, that's different, John.
So.
Can I just touch on that, John? So this is, I think this is a real moment for who we are and our identity. And we're seeing that expressed at the moment in multiple ways, which I think is really exciting, actually. There's an Indigenous expression. If we just step back a bit, it's really exciting. If I was to give someone a cuisine opportunity in New Zealand, you get nowhere else in the world, it would be mussels on a, well, fire, corrugated iron mussels. That's our experience. It's not trying to pretend like we're in mini Europe or somewhere else. No.
Look at what Peter Gordon does. He does local, organic, beautiful food, and that's what he's trying to present us to the world.
So there's a lot of work to do there, I think, in exploring that whole piece about clean green reputation and make it real. I'm a great advocate of New Zealand being an organic eco nation. That's my vision. I'm pretty proud and out about that. Why not? Who else is doing it?
Just on that, the point that Guy was making around in EU, they haven't deregulated yet. There's a big push, exactly what Brendan's saying. This is a global debate in every country, including the UK after Brexit. And the UK was about to go full on American deregulation, but I think even they've paused to align with the EU. And the government was, and minister, sorry, MPs were written to on the day the bill came out to say, please pause this bill before it even gets its first reading, because the EU hasn't deregulated gene editing. And in fact, there's this huge push. And let me just be really clear, the surveys show 85%, I think, on average, of Europeans and Americans want gene editing labeled, not the old GMOs, but the new stuff that the government's saying they won't label, it doesn't even matter. So the markets are really clear. And the other thing out of Europe, which again, I was a bit peeved by the little video you played earlier with the food bowl. The EU supermarkets are warning regulators there, and I don't know whether Woolworths and Foodstuffs are up to it here, but they're warning that without regulation, without traceability, the cost of food will go up. That, as I said, the supermarkets here have got contractors and growers supplying, Macro from Countdown and Pam's with product in our supermarkets. If they need to secure that to be non-GMO, which is what they want to be, that's going to add in costs if you haven't got regulation and traceability through the food system. And that's really, so another little meme. Increasing the cost of food for the public because you're introducing gene editing unregulated. And that's not to mention increased on costs on farmers, because the other leg of the EU debate, which is nowhere near our discussion, is patenting. Because don't forget, patenting of seeds is where this started off 20 years ago, Monsanto getting the G soy control and really cornering that market. And the EU is also looking at stopping patenting on these new genomic technique products, because they're so much like nature, it could really mean that farmers and growers suddenly get blocked accessing natural products because suddenly they've been patented for some reason and cleverly. So the patent issue is a big one. Again, not in the bill, nowhere in our discussion, but it needs to be.
Hang on,
just before we move on, Tane, can I just quickly show that thing that I was finding, and that this is from the media pack, and on the particular bill. So it says here, the use of gene technology will be safe. So there you go. It just will be. We don't have to provide any kind of evidence. It's just there. Take it as they say it. Okay, Tane.
So Jono, I've got a follow-up question in there for you. As a farmer, what effect could this bill have on New Zealand's meat and dairy sectors, given the international respect for our GE-free grass-fed produce?
Well, that's the thing. This is the crazy thing. I see all around the world demand for GE-free produce, and it seems like everyone who's been, like the States comes to mind, they've been doing this a while, and everyone's trying to jump off the wagon. And we're here saying, let's jump on, when we know the wagon's, you know, defective. I would say that before I go into my concerns about the technology, I would first come in with the question of, what is the problem that this technology is trying to fix? Because I don't see a legitimate problem. So, like, the first that it just needs to be addressed is, if this thing's going to add, if it's going to take more of the market share away from farmers and add it to, you know, if it's not going to come out of the pockets of farmers, which it probably will, and it will also probably cost the end consumer more, what's the cost benefit analysis? I don't see a legitimate one, because in my line of work, you know, we deal with the issues at a root cause level. So things like methane is just a byproduct of a shitty diet. You eat shitty food, you're not popular with your wife in the bed at night. There's an excess of methane production. It's no different with cows. If you feed cows a shitty diet with excessive protein, and you're not balancing minerals and protein and fiber, you're gonna have gas. And like, let's not even go into the debate of climate change and greenhouse gases, but I just don't see a legitimate problem for this level of risk.
Right, thanks for that, Jono. So we'll move on to the next question, and this one is initially directed to Brendan. What are the potential economic and trade risks if New Zealand proceeds with deregulating gene technologies? And if you could speak to, say, some of the numbers involved in this, you know, how OANZ was able to commission that report, which talked about export risk, etc.
Yeah, the report we did, like I mentioned earlier, there hasn't been research done. The estimate from NZIER was somewhere between 10 to 20 billion. New Zealand Institute of Economic Research is respected by everyone in New Zealand. They've been around a long time, do a lot of work across a lot of sectors. We also visited sector bodies, horticulture, beef and lamb, fed farmers. People know that there's a problem. It's very divisive. So from a trade perspective, yeah, normally trade is about relationships. New Zealand does not have a lot of power in trade negotiations. We haven't got a lot on offer to sell. It might come as a shock to people. But we don't, actually. What we have is really nice things to have. There's no need. We don't feed anyone, as I've said. There's no one needs what we want. They like to haves. So really what we have on the trade table to negotiate is some meat, some dairy powder, some cheeses and kiwi fruit, some fruits, and a couple of bottles of wine. It's not a lot.
Mate, come on.
No. At a trade, because What we have to trade with is our medicines, our technology, our oil. So when you stack it up, actually the weight on the trade negotiation, we're a seller. Now, we're not like Australia, because Australia has minerals and precious metals and things like that. We don't have that as a nation. Our primary delivery is primary produce. So we really have to stay high. There has to be a point of difference. And what we do know is globally, there's price wars between the Nestle's and the Unilevers, Danone's. These countries are pushing prices down. So we need a point of difference, right? So why in the hell would you forfeit any point of difference? So that 10 to 20 billion was rigorously put through the ring. In fact, they calmed it down. And they also, from a trade perspective, looked at tourism within that. And it means when we go to the trade table, which our trade negotiations have to do on our behalf, you've got to be really respectful. And I think New Zealand, there needs to be a bit of an awakening about what is actually going on. Jono, this is no disrespect to what we do as a country, right? But that's the fact. That is what happens. We need medicines. We actually need more than we actually have to offer. So it's a destination. So I think the whole economic thing, that was the economic report. And it means, so if any change that we made, to be respectful to a buyer, as a seller, we're always more vulnerable than the buyer. The buyer has the power. So if we're going to make even the slightest of changes, we have to negotiate that with them. Always. There's no...
Just to add a bit of...
Please, go
just to add a bit of context to that number, the $10 to $20 billion. So they estimate that, this is from the G3 press release, that the 2025 agricultural exports for New Zealand in total is worth $54 billion. That's what it's projected to be. And then the number quoted before was $10 to $20 billion potential drop in export demand. So it's a really significant.
It's a significant amount. Number. So what I do know, for example, Zespri, I think, I've got a lot of respect for Zespri as a brand. They listen to their market. Zespri is the brand. It's not the grower. The growers own Zespri. It is the brand. They listen intimately to their customers. Any change in flavor, they wouldn't just introduce a new kiwi fruit and say, look, there you go. Lump it or like it and sit back going, sure, no way. They spend years building a relationship. So this is the change required. Yes, no, okay. Some markets want it like this. So that is a sophisticated business we should aspire to be a world leader, not down. So look, I just don't, you listen to what's espoused by our ministers, plural, and ministries who are under the pump. The risk assessment by EMB says it's rushed. They haven't done the homework. What is driving the push? And those are the sorts of questions we need to be holding feet to the fire on. And because we're very vulnerable as a trading nation to our markets. And, as someone who trades in markets offshore, the customer is always right. And so we've got to be really good. We've got to host well. We do that. You know, we're pretty good at it. Brennan, they like what we have.
Brennan, right now, Fonterra, looking for expressions of interest for suppliers to for organic milk in the South Island. Currently, there's no supply in the South Island to Fonterra for organic milk supply. So there's obviously a demand for our organic milk. What happens to our organic milk supply and our certifications when we let GMO loose?
Exactly.
Okay, really good question, Jono. Thanks for raising it. To make it very clear for everyone, GMO is a non-permitted activity in the organic system, in the organic process. Everywhere in the world is regulated against that. We've got a new regulation in New Zealand, a new act, the Organic Products and Production Act. It's not permitted. So we could go down a rabbit hole there, but it is really precarious because we've been told, when we've been to Wellington, we've been told that whether you're conventional or organic, you're going to have to pay to prove that you're non-GMO. Now, I'm helping a company in Australia, which is helping a company in China try to get into Europe because they keep finding GMO because the level of testing keeps going up and up and up and up. And this is going to happen to our product. Look, they can find glyphosate in our honey. They ping us all the time. So, it's kind of precarious, scary, really, what we're thinking of doing. It's not very smart, and everyone here has to be really hold their feet to the fire on this. And just to assure you, Jono, that I do know that most major companies in New Zealand who deal in food have got their hands up just going, whoa, radical. It is radical, way too fast, way too much, no discussion. Something's being rammed through, unacceptable.
Somebody made a good comment in the chat before about getting in behind those companies who are doing the woe at the moment and letting them know that they have got support. And I thought that's a good idea. So that's
Totally.
a thing that people can do.
And
It kind of leads us
calling
nicely
up
into the
the
next. Pardon, John?
supermarkets. Calling up the supermarkets to remind them that
Yes.
if they are buying their Macro brand and their Pam's brand because it's non-GMO, that they've got to keep faith with that. And just to pick up on Brendan's point, I mean, Zespri have had a pipeline of innovation, all non-GMO, because of the consumer resistance to it. And whilst most of the food body industry bodies are kind of trying to play it a little bit both ways. Fonterra's got investment in lab grown meat and all this kind of stuff. They must know, excuse the pun, but where their bread is buttered, and they must know that people want non-GMO. And in fact, I spoke to one of the heads of Lewis Road Creamery when it was setting up and going into America, and he said the minute he started speaking about New Zealand milk products from Lewis Road Creamery, the first thing they were asked was, "Is it non-GMO?" And he could say yes, and they wanted it. And as Brendan said, we kind of got what the world wants, and it's now for us to lose. And in terms of answering Jono's point, that little video played up front is the kind of, oh, this is reasons why we need it. But as this panel, and I hope a lot of your listeners know, is if it's about fixing climate change by altering the gut of a cow, well, we know, as Jono just said, that mixed forage can reduce the methane that they're spending billions or millions of dollars trying to do the GE ryegrass. There's variations that can do that, and mixed forage is something that will improve animal health. So if it's climate change, the answer has to be, well, there's other ways to fix this. And if it's, I'm not sure what the other problems are. If it's food quality, well, organics and sustainable non-GMO agriculture is probably where the food quality market demand is. So, we could go through what the arguments are for GMOs, and I think we might end up with, and we'll go there in a minute, oh, medicine then. So it's going to help the sick people.
Yeah, thank you. That kind of leads us into the next one, Guy. I was going to ping you for this one, please. So you've been vocal about the absence of the ethical considerations and also the precautionary principle in this bill. Could you elaborate on why you believe these should play a central role in gene tech regulation?
Thank you, Alia. Well, the precautionary principle basically says that there is a social responsibility to protect the public from exposure to harm when scientific investigation has found a plausible risk. And we do have a plausible risk here, and that risk appears in two ways, basically. There are a great number of studies showing that biotech procedures have side effects. So there's a known risk. And there's also an unknown risk. There's an awful lot that is not known about the action of DNA. And whilst that's a technical subject that we're probably not going to go into a lot here, it is really important because the amount that is unknown lying ahead in biotechnology absolutely dwarfs what we do know. Again, in this video that we had, we saw from the government, this sort of laughable video, there's a lot of talk about in there about health benefits, and as if the whole biotechnology sector was, focused firmly on health benefits, and therefore, by definition, they had social responsibility and good intentions and so on. But the real money in biotechnology is in replacing commodities that everyone uses every day. So if you want to make a lot of money, you synthesize a food additive, or you persuade the government to mandate that everybody has to use what you make, as happened in the pandemic, or you replace staples that everyone has for breakfast. Now, the absolute need of people who want to work in that field, which is almost everyone in biotechnology, is there should be no requirement for side effects testing. There should be the ability to patent it, and no need to ask or answer difficult ethical questions, and the ability to just simply substitute. Now, this is already going on. And it's going on here in New Zealand also. And foods and additives are appearing here without us knowing what's happening. Our basic foods are changing. The rennets in cheeses, the flavors that go into foods, the colorings that go into foods, they're all swapping over into biosynthesized. I've got a little story here. My daughter had a good friend when we lived in the Midwest, and they had a house with 12 bedrooms and three swimming pools. And her grandfather invented a strawberry flavor. So when you buy strawberry ice cream, then it doesn't have any strawberries in it. It has strawberry flavor, and you're enriching someone who has an absolutely grand lifestyle somewhere on the other side of the world. If you use, say, we used CRISPR to produce something here in New Zealand, that if you want to commercialize it, so you've done a bit of gene editing, you've discovered something which you think you might commercialize, well, you then have to pay a patent fee. The patent fees run to about $100 million per product if you want to commercialize something you produced using CRISPR. That's, you're paying someone in the United States. And the other side of what's going on here that's not at all ethical, an enormous amount of the research in biotechnology is actually military research. It's all about bioweapons, countering bioweapons, inventing bioweapons. And the government's not saying a lot about that, but that's where the money is, and that's where all of this leads to. So, ethics don't really come into this business, actually. It's a very, that, scientists, science has kind of changed now. People in biotechnology have seen some inventors of some procedures or products become billionaires, and they want to be billionaires too. It's not an ethical industry as such. And what we're proposing here is just open the gates, let these people in. We don't want that here. We can, we can live without it and enjoy our lives.
Can I add to some of the points about the precautionary principle? Because let's be clear, the precautionary principle is in the current Has No Act, as I understand it, and it re requires the person, the regulator in this case, to be precautious if you don't quite know what you're doing, when you really don't know. And gene technology is about to combine with artificial intelligence, AI, nanotechnology, synthetic biology. So even though this is a gene technology bill, the regulator has to look at what else it can be combined with and look at the risks. The precautions actually going to become more important into the future. But as well as the ethical issues that I know we'll talk about, because there's this very slightly obscene kind of clause in the bill which says mandatory approvals of medical emergency medical GE. So I'm sure we'll talk about that. But what's again not mentioned in the bill is the animals. For years, we've had some really nasty experiments with animals in New Zealand. I mean, if you, I say this, because it is worth looking up. If you Google GE calves die in GM trial, I think it is. It's a New Zealand Herald article from, it is quite a while ago, and hopefully we've learned our lessons, but not by the look of this bill. There is not one ethical control in this bill. The minister says, oh, the normal regulations for, you know, animal welfare will cover this. Not with GE. If you can imagine what you can do with just changing an animal to be slightly more useful to industrial farming. And we're not talking about cows and their guts. We're talking about the size of chickens, the limbs on animals. If we don't have regulation to stop cruelty to animals through GE, again, we're really missing the boat. And I hope that the animal welfare people around the world will wake up to this. There's not one word of ethics in this bill for humans, for animals, for society.
Absolutely, John.
Yeah, I think it was actually really telling when I looked at the regulatory statement itself, as I've referred to it a few times, because you just can't quite believe it how often they're actually critiquing what's going on. But what they even say is they say it's safe, but I saw that they said one of the out-of-date provisions, which is why we need this bill, it's out of date, is the precautionary approach. It's like, so it doesn't even make sense on the reading of it.
Can I just make one quick addition to that, Claire? There's also this mantra that we're very outcome focused. It's all about the outcome, which is a very ends justifies the means sort of mentality. There's been a big change, and I think we can all feel that. We all feel that. So just from an organic, Jono's point about an organic process to be certified, it's a process. It's not an outcome focused. Organic is not a quality label. It is that you have passed a process to order to reach a standard. We are shifting completely away from that process into being very outcome. So the logic of that is there's no reason in the Olympics to have standards. You can just juice up and run as fast as you want because it's all about the outcome, right? Jump high, run fast, let's see it. There could be a dual Olympics like that in the future. But I think these are the sorts of, I mean, the language, Claire, that you just picked up is critical. We've got to pick up on the language and push it back.
Yeah. I'm wanting to ask a question to John now. From a consumer rights perspective, what risks does this bill pose? We've probably touched on some of those already, but sort of.
Well, the whole, in fact, some of the MB reports actually say there's not a lot of, there's actually data to say there's not a lot of support for this transformative change in this bill. I think its primary purpose, a research company, and they showed, they slightly were dodgy when they're, if you go to their report, primary purpose, it's a dodgy little page because it shows actually 14% of the New Zealand people they surveyed support easing regulations of GMOs and GE. It shows another bunch who support case by case, opening up research. Now, that group was combined in their report to say a lot of people support this. They don't. 14% support the radical change. Most people certainly want consumer choice and the right to choose. So as I say, the things that are not in the bill, not allowing regulation and traceability of these new genomic techniques, means no labelling, no tracing, no consumer choice, no market pushback. And somebody was saying to me, oh, the market will push back on this. The whole thing's being jacked up so the consumer has no right to know. And so that's really what the heart of this issue from a consumer rights point of view, the basic right to know that our food, our choice, you know, the little logos that you see around, and that's being taken away surreptitiously. The minister will say, oh, we're going to continue to label the GMO food, that those horrible transgenic things that we know you don't like. And this is new stuff. And it's the, ooh, nothing to see here. This is not GMOs. This is gene editing. Now, as I think Guy or someone said early on, this is nonsense. These are highly complex, clever, powerful technologies about to be combined with AI and nanotech, etc. So you've got to regulate them. And even if they're assumed safe, which there's no scientific basis to assume safety of gene-edited foods unless you check to make sure you haven't changed anything accidentally. But to assume safety and exclude all of these products from labelling and traceability is a betrayal of the consumer. And as I think somebody already said, it's going to transfer costs onto the organic growers, onto non-GMO conventional growers, which is the majority of growers in New Zealand, onto consumers, because the supermarkets aren't going to pay the growers to keep it safe and without charging the consumers to pay them to keep the food supply safe. So it's all coming down the supply chain. And there's a number of articles. I think GM Watch is a very good source for the global news. And they're saying in Europe, as well as the supermarkets saying, you've got to regulate this stuff, you've got to trace it, you'll increase food costs if you don't. And that's what I haven't heard that from Woolworths here. I haven't heard that from Foodstuffs here. I haven't heard it from the growers supplying those companies, but they're all in the firing line with the non-GMO and organic producers. So, and the reason why they're in the firing line is not because they can, they don't need to worry about it for any other reason, and that's what the consumer is demanding globally. The market growth for non-GMO and organic food and sustainable and ethical food is the opportunity. And there's an opportunity cost from not pursuing that, not knowing how much we're worth, as Brendan's pointed out, not knowing how many people are buying our products because they're non-GMO. You need to ask them. But I think there's been a deliberate not looking at this. Ironically, New Zealanders end up having this great brand asset, this point of difference in the market, which the government's busily trying to hide, pretend it doesn't exist and get rid of. I mean, Prime Minister on Jack Tame interview said he thought the premium was only 5% for non-GMO. It's much more than that, as the study that the ONs commissioned. And he also says he sees no risks. Now, someone's got to tell him about the risks.
And John, even if the dollar does get past the consumer to make something safe, in this case gene editing, it doesn't actually guarantee any safety. Like, when we're talking about gene editing, we're talking about either switching genes on or suppressing genes. I had a fascinating conversation with Dr. Jack Heineman recently on a podcast. I had him on. I think you guys have talked to him as well. He talks about how these technologies are not specifically accurate. They can't guarantee without any doubt that they will target specific genes. Let that sink in. But I'll add to that, for those consumers, and maybe this should have been my 30-second spiel in the elevator, it's also not specific to any specific host. It can go into other organisms and affect other gene expressions or suppressions in other organisms, and you're eating that food.
Can I just one quick thing again? There is a piece of work with FSANS on the labelling, Food Standards Australia and New Zealand, in conjunction with this bill. So there's been a double play here for everyone. And without, I'm assuming everyone is conscious of this, but if not, we've been working very well with the Australian organic community to really push as best we can on that. There is this, and it's been mentioned before, I've been trying to follow the chat. There's a lot of good. That's great. What's happening in there? The right to know, traceability and labelling. Now, that right to know is what the whole food industry is based on here. Can trace it all the way back to the plant, to the field, to the row. And they're about to remove that. And Jono, you're absolutely right. It's all about, it's more efficient. It's not precise. And watch, everyone, watch for this word precise. All of a sudden, there's all the technology, everything's become more precise. Don't be fooled. It's not precise. It's more efficient. So the speed of things is speeding up. We all feel that. So, so the FSANS work continues. We had a very big meeting end of last year in December on that. And we're working closely with Australia to push back on traceability, because it's an essential element in terms of human rights, which they haven't thought about. Thank you.
Thanks, Brendan. John, I've got a question for you. What sort of feedback or concerns are you hearing on the ground and in your online spaces from the farming community, not just the regenerative but also conventional? Like, what sort of concerns are people mentioning to you?
Yeah, great, Tana. And yeah, I am connected with farmers across the whole spectrum of farmers, and I've heard from two people out of the thousands of conversations that I've had on the subject who are open, and I wouldn't say pro, but open to possibilities. And that's it. Everyone else has been extremely concerned, not interested. Basically no one's that keen on this technology in the farming industry. And the other thing is, like, the thing with farmers is they've been at the mercy of big ag for a long time now. And Big Ag's been forcing, not forcing, this isn't, I'm not painting farmers as victims here, but if you start at the at education, you go to Lincoln University, you get taught that you have a problem, the solution comes in a can, or it comes in a vaccine, or it comes in an injection, or you know, a chemical. And so farmers are used to being sold these products as silver bullets, and some farmers get used to that. Most farmers use them, realize they just cause more problems, and look for different solutions. And thank goodness for organizations like Quorum Sense and other farmer-led organizations where it's got, you know, diversity of solutions and solutions focused. But for those that haven't gotten to that space and they're still relying on advisors, most of which are in the pockets of big ag and big industry, they're still wanting to get their fix in the form of a recipe. Give me the answer in a drum or a, you know what I'm saying? And so there's a small amount of people who may be curious about another tool in their toolbox of silver bullet solutions. But those farmers are becoming less and less every year because they're waking up like the consumers.
Yep.
Thanks, Jono. I don't know, Alia, we had a question here that's for Guy. We're seeing a lot of anxiety on the internet about the use of this phrase, mandatory medical activity authorizations. And what we were seeing is there seems to be potentially a perception that that is linked to the use of the word mandatory as we would have seen during the COVID times. But from our understanding, it's relating to more of an automation, you know, an automatic approval process. But obviously, you've been looking at this a lot more than us. I just wonder if you could clarify the use of those phrases, mandatory medical activity authorization, that clause, and the other clause about the emergency authorizations, and how you see what's going on with those clauses.
Well, imagine if you were buying a car and there was an agreement, and we don't normally read these agreements, but say you read through the agreement and you suddenly came to a clause that said, I hereby grant power of attorney over my bank accounts to the person selling me this car. You would raise your eyebrows and you wouldn't sign the agreement. Why are these two clauses in here? They're extraordinarily vague. They grant sweeping powers to the regulator and the minister. And the whole structure of the bill, which sort of, I think it basically grants powers to someone over our lives that are vague and can be misinterpreted and misused. And I don't care how many times they tell us that actually we're going to be using it like this. It's not going to be like that. If the wording of the bill is that loose that it grants sweeping powers, you can bet your bottom dollar that they are going to be misused. The two clauses, emergency authorizations, mandatory medical activity authorizations, are vague, they're permissive, and they replace what you normally see in legislation, which is specific rules about how something applies. So they move it into the hands of the minister and the regulator, and in a very sort of general and non-specific way. And they don't, they really don't say why these clauses are suddenly thrown in there. And why are we suddenly going to be mandated to automatically adopt any procedures that are in any two other countries? It basically, these phrases in there are a blank check. And what is it? And what Collins told us was, well, if we have these kind of provisions, we'll be able to catch up with everyone else. And for example, she cited the example of a CAR T cell treatment for cancer. And she said this would be a huge boon for the country. Well, CAR T cell treatment for cancer costs about 1 million New Zealand dollars per person. There are 30,000 people diagnosed with cancer in New Zealand each year. Say we had to mandatorily adopt CAR T cell treatment, which we would have to, because the bill says that the minister, that the regulator has to approve it. That would cost, if we had to do it in a mandatory sense, it would cost our health service the whole of the national budget plus 50% more. The whole of the national health service budget would simply go on this one technology. And does it actually cure cancer? The answer is no. It can cause CAR T cell theory. Therapy can cause severe side effects, including cytokine release syndrome, which is an inflammatory re response that ranges from mild symptoms to even multi-organ failure and death. The beneficial effect of healthy eating dwarfs the possible benefits of CAR T cell therapy. If the government were to invest in educating people through the schools, through public health, that there are ways to eat and manage your life, like exercise and so on, that would drastically reduce cancer incidence.
Mate, it'll do more than that. It'll do far more than that. If we can just get back to basics, get rid of all this overcomplicated, because I love how you said that, Guy. Nothing specific. It's kind of all waffle. It's kind of all noise. And if we just come back to basic health and what does it look like? Well, it's really simple. You look after soil like it's the health of your children. It starts there. You grow healthy food. You eat that food. Take care of your own mental well-being. You won't need any of that medicine. And I tell you what, it feels pretty good to grow your own food and harvest your own food. Like this ripple effect. But the trouble is, it only makes you money. I think that's the problem, that coming back to basics like this, there's no money in it for big industry.
Can I comment on those clauses? Because I mean, Guy's talked about it specifically. It's hard to know what is that. He's exactly right. It's hard to know what it's going to cover, what it means, why. But it gives it this huge opening, and there's a couple of things in this bill that gives huge powers both to the minister to appoint the regulator to make changes and the regulator, because as I said, the exclusion from all regulation of these new genomic technique products is the start of it. So that's not even in the bill, the stuff that's going to be around in our shops if we're not careful soon. But the future allows the regulator to deregulate other new forms of technology, whatever they are. They have to give 30 days notice to the public and take submissions. But where this might come from is something that was in the National Party's prospectus before the election. They said they wanted to have mandatory approval, also automatic, I think is a better word, automatic approval of a GE product that had been approved by regulators in two other countries. It wasn't medicine, it was any product, which again rang alarm bells for me and the agricultural industry, I guess, because that means that, Argentina and America have improved Roundup Ready crops, so we've got to have those here. So obviously they've realized that that was a ridiculously broad definition. But what is left is the medical one. And what is a signal for us to be aware of, and all the listeners and watchers of this video, is that it's opening up alignment with overseas countries, which sounds good. You've got to align. Of course you have to align, but align in reverse. So we will have to take what they tell us. So it goes back to those trade discussions we've had. It's not all us pushing out and trying to be a seller. It is, of course, that. But we're being told also by powers that be globally what really fits those powers rather than the consumer market trends. And what really concerns me is this invisibility of the market by not labeling GMOs and gene-edited products makes the market creates market failure. And if it's all about the money and the market and the consumer being king and queen, we've got to respect that. We've got to have tracing and labeling of gene-edited products. It's absolutely fundamental.
Do you know it's crazy, John? All around the world in the agricultural industry, people, especially in the UK as well, they look at us as like kind of leaders in the agricultural industry, And here we're being told that we should follow the rest of the world when the rest of the world's saying we need to look at what New Zealand's doing and follow them.
Yeah.
We could just own.
Well said, Jono. So I was going to ask, who stands to gain from the bill? Talking not necessarily individuals, but organisations and industries and businesses. Who stands to gain? Brendan?
Yeah, look, that was a really, I think we're getting warmed up. As good as we get to the end, we're warming up. I think we could all feel that there's clearly a change going on. All of us at one level, there's change going on. And with that, an awakening. My take on things, and I'll qualify this in terms of my work here, both in New Zealand and globally. I've been on the World Board. I've been on Unilever Sustainable Agriculture Advisory Board. And I write with a global alliance around the food systems. There's a whole consortium of people. But clearly, my opinion is the West, the industrial West, has lost all moral leadership. It's gone. You'd be foolish. Anyone would be foolish to back us. Us. We're part of that industrial complex. We've benefited from it. And it's gone. It's in the past. And I do think, looking at it at a middle level, what we are seeing is voices coming up everywhere in the world. In my experience, I spend time overseas, whether it be traditional or indigenous voices coming out, trying to say we've got to do it different. We have to listen. And that's about a power relationship. And so it is an awakening and a real chance for us. This is all about control of the food system, without a doubt. And IP. It's as simple as that. And so we, the big Tato, have to get that back. That's a people thing. So we've got a choice. And so, look, I really congratulate. It's a very simple question. You know, who gets to gain from it? Agritech. They're the people making money, not farmers, right, Jono? No. Suffering. Who benefits from this is those suckering off. And enough. It's enough. But we have to call it out, and we have to recognize what I would call the industrial West is lost. We've lost our way. So there's this giving up, giving in, letting go. But we've got to be clear about what we want. And I think that's really exciting. And watch for it. There'll be, I think they're capturing our language. I mean, what the organic community globally, fastest growing multi-food sector in the world, I was at the World Conference recently. Language is being captured all the time. Food is our medicine is something we'd all understand. You wait for that to be captured. There'll be trying attempts to come in because we're onto something. They're having a go. We've got to push back and piss off. Frankly, I'm not conspiratory, but we have to get organized, right?
Can I answer Tony's question about who benefits?
Yeah, because, John.
Let's be really clear. The video you played, which, as I say, I was a bit annoyed that we wasted even 5 minutes playing the government propaganda, but useful context. That video is telling you, it's answering your question, Tane. It says society is going to benefit. But let's be really clear. The deal with society has been the right to choose, and it's been... It's so much for the public good to do the research over the last 20 years that all the risks are socialized. So the public pays if something goes wrong. This bill changes that. It's commercializing genetic engineering, opening it up in New Zealand, but they're not changing the socialized risk and they're not keeping the precautionary principle. So this regulator is going to be in charge of basically enabling. So who benefits? Biotechnology companies to do stuff, because that's the aim of this bill, supposedly to benefit the public, but if things go wrong, the public pay. And I think really clearly that we have to have strict liability on the users of GMOs and gene edited products. And we have to have mandatory commercial insurance, because the commercial insurers are the experts in risk. At the moment, the regulator's being left to say, well, it's not a lot of risk and, you know, never mind. I mean, seriously, the regulator has enormous power to do absolutely nothing. And what we need to do is ensure that in place is liability on these users and some kind of expertise, whether it's strict liability insurance or whatever, let's have a debate, maybe next Thursday, get someone in from the insurance industry to talk to us about how do they calculate risk, because that's really where the benefit is. And I can say, certainly tell you where the benefit isn't. It's not on consumers, because they want the right to choose and they won't have that. It won't be on farmers who want the right to know what they're growing. They won't have that. It won't be on exporters, as Brendan's talked about. It won't be on animals. The benefit's not to animals because they're in the firing line for a big exploitation with GE. It's not going to be nature because whilst you could argue you're going to fix up natural problems and methane, really you're going to add to the problem potentially. It's not for Māori who've had no voice in the bill, whether you're pro-Māori voice or not pro-Māori voice, the bill hasn't given them one. They've given them a little committee. So, and it's not good for ratepayers. Those local councils who are about to have the right taken away to have GE-free zones and put the costs on those people doing those trials, that means that the ratepayers will end up cleaning up. And that's happened. 20 years ago, there was a company called PPL that ran 2,000 GE sheep that had to be destroyed because the company went bankrupt and the product didn't work, the medical product the sheep were being used to produce. They all had to be destroyed, burned and buried. That was all at ratepayer costs because the company went bankrupt. So there's no liability. And in this bill, there's no requirement to prove financial fitness to pay the fines, to pay the bills, to clean it up if it goes wrong. So financial fitness on companies is something that I'd also like to see, as well as liability. As otherwise, Tane's answer would be, well, there ain't any benefit for the public. It's all going to the biotech industry.
Mm.
A few weeks ago, there was an article about someone had benefited from CRISPR-based gene replacement therapy for sickle cell anemia. And it went all over the world. This person, one person had had this procedure. And I tried for a long time to try and find out how long those benefits lasted, what was the outcome, because she'd had the procedure 3 years ago. And I finally found it in an article in Nature. The company, Vertex Technologies, that developed the procedure, they've treated so far 22 patients at a cost of New Zealand $6 million per patient. Out of those 22 patients, just 5 had improvements that lasted more than a year. And, you know, so there's just, you know, who benefits? It really is the patent holders, the technology sector that all want to have their large salaries. And they want to have their research grants, the patent holders who want to be paid really large sums of money if they've kind of managed cleverly to patent something and so on.
Mm.
These are not real benefits. They're certainly not going to benefit New Zealand.
Claire, what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, Guy, what we had a question here to round things out was for the elevator pitch for each of you, for if you're in the elevator, if you were so fortunate with Judith Collins or maybe David Seymour. I'm thinking, well, we might be a bit close to time, so we may continue that in the next week. But I thought I'd just like to hear what Guy would like to say if you were stuck in the elevator, and then we will catch up with everybody else in our part two segment. But I'm sure you've thought about it, Guy.
I have. I've been thinking about it all through our talk tonight. And do you know what I thought about was so utterly unrepeatable on the air that I actually can't tell you, Claire. I just can't. because what do you say to people who can't, you know, who can't think?
Claire, can I chip in? I thought about it. Not so bad as Guy's thinking. I'd like to say to her, look, don't worry about your cafe latte, Judith. She's been on about how the Aucklanders are having their cafe latte, so a soy latte with GMO soy, and it's all everywhere. No one cares. It's not everywhere. Every brand in the supermarkets in New Zealand of soy milk is non-GMO. So I'd like to say to her, Judith, don't worry about the GM soy. It doesn't exist in New Zealand. We've pushed it out of the market, and the market wants non-GMO.
Yeah, Claire, can I? Sorry, you should just Guy, but I can't help myself too because I did think about it. The Honourable Judith Collins is human also.
So
I'd offer her a foot rub.
Oh,
seriously, you've got to get I started with, you know, I'm in the lift, it's her and I, it's broken down, there we are. She doesn't have to do it. You've got to get, I think this is one thing, folks, it's not a combative thing. Mm. We've got to be compassionate with each other. That's what we're seeking with our relationship with the earth and our food. We talk about healthy soil, food and people. And the key thing we're talking about, the work that we're doing with government and organics Aotearoa, is to slow it down and open up. Right? And we've got to get it. We've got to, it's not a rush. We've got to, we don't need to be like rushed. So yeah, good foot rub and we'll have a discussion.
I think if I ever saw you in an elevator, I think I might just
You'd get one too, Jono.
You're getting a shout.
Jack that up.
Oh, shit, this elevator's full.
I think
I'll arrange
thing,
that for us, Jono.
One thing's for sure, though, you know, we do like to try and always look at the positive. And one of the things I saw in this regulatory report, which I keep referring back to, is that they were worried about, you know, the consensus of New Zealand, what New Zealanders think. They know that that a lot of people not happy with this. They went on and on about how they hadn't had enough time. They haven't had enough time to really check into what the benefits could be. And they haven't taken any time to see what the negative economic effects could be. They just basically, it's a very poor reflection on what's gone on. And it's so bad that I think we have a really good chance to rally people and get them to see that this is something that is worth fighting for and is we've got good tools, and all of the people here in this talk have been putting out incredible information. And so we'll make sure we get this out as soon as possible so that you can share it and people can come along to another one. And hopefully you gentlemen might be able to join us as well, because I think, you know, it was really valuable having you.
It's also important to note that this particular topic stretches well beyond the community that we're speaking to right now. There are people on the other side of the divide who also do not want to see this go ahead. So it's broad reaching, and it's also good to remind everybody of the power that we've had in the past. So when people come together and we actually all work towards a goal like this, saying no to this particular bill, we have had good results in recent times. So some examples were the WHO, the International Health Regulations Amendments. We pushed back with the turnover of the governments from the last one to this one and had good result there. We pushed back on the COVID inquiry and managed to get a much more broader inquiry for the second phase based on our, you know, our people's terms that we had the big petition for. So again, remember to go through to our webpage that we have got on this, and I can just quickly share it again. This is what you'll land on. Remember to put some thought into it. Have your say. If anything that really rang true with you on tonight's call, include that in your feedback. Watch the video, see how to do it if you're unsure. We've got some prompts here for you. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for you to spread the word and get as many people engaged on this as possible, because people power really does work. So,
oh, Alia, you could show quickly the poster that you've been working away on.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I did. Hang on. Oh, here we go. I think it's down the bottom here. So it is. If you can't see that, I'll try and
make it bigger, Alia.
Roll it up. It won't let me make it bigger.
You'll have to go there and then you'll be able to get it. But it's a good poster. We've got it in different formats that you can download and share.
And there's more coming. So we're just getting started. We've still got a month. That's a lot of time in our book, because normally we only have a week to do this kind of thing. So plenty of time for you all to get out there and bang the pots and you know, gather the troops to push back on this.
Yeah, and I just really want to thank the special guests that we had this evening. Really appreciate your time and that, you know, what you've put into tonight and all the work that you are doing behind the scenes. you know, we know that it's never ending, really, but it's better when we're together and do, tackling things in this manner. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
And thank everybody in the comments, I would say as well, as somebody pointed out, I can't remember who was commenting, we're a little bit rusty. Well, speaking for myself, I've hardly done any webinars for so long, but next time you're on, we'll have a better go at referencing the comments because there were so many. They were flying by constantly. And like I say, we will make sure that we download those and we can make sure that if there's any common threads and things like that, which I'm sure there will be, we can address next week.
Sure can. Lovely. Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, everyone.
Fine.
Thank you.
Bye. Good evening. See you guys.
Bye.